Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast. Today I'm joined by Elena Noble, PT, MPT from Rifton, to discuss gait training with a dynamic component. Since graduating in 2006 with a master's degree in physical therapy, Elena has worked in private practice, taking referrals for orthopedic, pediatric, and neuro rehab patients. She additionally provides product design consultation and assists with consumer education for Rifton equipment. This includes editing the quarterly Rifton newsletter, Rifton Rapport, and Rifton's adaptive mobility and positioning blog. As part of her work with Rifton, Elena routinely presents CEU and educational courses in adaptive mobility and seating and the MOVE program. Elena is a member of the APTA sections of pediatrics and neurology. So our podcast today is sponsored by Rifton. Based in New York, Rifton designs and manufactures a range of seating and mobility products known throughout the special needs community for thoughtful design and durability. Products include gait trainers, standers, hygiene and toileting systems, transfer and mobility systems, and activity chairs. In addition, Rifton supports industry clinicians and providers via robust educational offerings that include newsletters, blogs, and webinars, and all Rifton products are developed, manufactured, and assembled in the USA and shipped worldwide. Elena, thanks for being on our podcast today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lori. It's great to be speaking with you today in the mobility management community about this exciting topic of dynamic gait training.
Absolutely. So our topic today is gait training, specifically gait training that has a dynamic component for children specifically to understand how that element impacts their gait training process. So for this podcast, we're going to focus on dynamic gait training for the pediatric population. So I guess we should start with the basics. Elena, what is gait training?
Gait training, when we talk about gait training in the pediatric population, we are talking about working with kids who have some type of neurological disturbance, either from a disease that might be genetically inherited, complications at birth, like your cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, an accident, which somehow disturbs that brain-to-body connection. So that as a result, we see weakness, we see contractures, spasticity, motor planning issues, all of which negatively impact the child's ability to walk, so much so that we need to provide them with assistance to maintain that upright position for step taking. And this can come in the form of walkers, parallel bars, or gait trainers, which we will be focusing on today. And yes, we are trying to help them walk again or even walk for the first time, but beyond focusing on just the step taking, we also want to put the focus on increasing their access to the environment and participation in daily life, expanding on their current levels of ability, sort of a gait training with a purpose. And I like to use the example of, say, little Johnny is getting off the bus to go to his classroom. He could either get into his wheelchair, get off the bus in a wheelchair and get pushed to his classroom, or he could get off the bus, transfer into a gait trainer, and walk that distance to his classroom. In doing so, he would get that practice opportunity for walking. He would be doing it alongside his peers, and it would also be increased independence. And that is ultimately what gait training is all about.
Okay, so the term gait training suggests that the gait trainer is teaching its user to walk, and certainly functional ambulation is absolutely a terrific outcome for us. But can gait training also offer benefits to the user even if that person is never able to walk independently?
Yes, and Lori, I do want to emphasize that point that you made, that walking independently is always the desired outcome, and we never want to lose sight of that goal or limit what our kiddos are capable of. But you're right, you know, for some, gait training is an ongoing process, and there will always be some aspect to work on or improve, and that's why the overarching goal of function is so important. But that being said, the benefits of ongoing gait training are enormous. We have evidence, especially in a number of smaller studies, to support improvements in gait speed, endurance, standing, functional improvements such as transfers and bed mobility. Gait training can even improve self-care and communication, improve bowel and bladder functioning, and of course, the risk of contractures. We can lower that with gait training. And this is all great stuff. However, sort of in the research world, these small studies are considered too small to be of much consequence, and we can't take them too seriously. But about a year ago, a great systematic review, really big study, was done by Booth and colleagues, in which they combined all these smaller studies, and they also looked at functional gait training, any type of gait training, whether it was over ground, over treadmill, with body weight support, without, robotic gait training. And they found that, yes, indeed, gait training really does all these great things. Improved gross motor function, endurance, improves walking speed. So we can certainly say with confidence that gait training is beneficial to children.
Okay, so now let's add an element to that gait trainer. Let's add a dynamic component to it. Once we do that, can you describe what that dynamic component is and how it can impact our gait training process?
Sure. Well, actually, I'd like to sort of reiterate that any type of gait training is beneficial, as we see from these studies. So when we talk about dynamic gait training, what I want to do here is talk about taking a good thing, which is gait training, and expanding on that, making that even better, so to speak. Sort of a history and background to dynamic movements. When we often think of dynamic movement, many of us think of these adaptive seating devices, which have the built-in ability to respond to a child's movement as they sit in the chair. There's posterior, anterior movement of the trunk, the movement of the legs, and we know that for kids with spasticity and dystonia, dynamic seating makes sitting much more functional. There's less shear, less energy expenditure, and kind of this background work in dynamic seating substantiates and informs our approach to applying dynamic movement to gait trainers. Now, when we think about movement in a gait trainer, the gait trainer frame will accommodate this movement of the body in a different way than a dynamic seat. And to appreciate that, we need to appreciate the movement of the body during walking, especially what we call the center of gravity, which is located in the pelvis. And as a child walks, as they go into that single leg stance phase, their center of gravity is at the highest point, 5 centimeters up. As they go into this double limb stance phase, their center of gravity goes down. So it's this kind of up-down movement of 5 centimeters displacement as a child is walking. The same is happening in that side-to-side direction. As they go into that single leg stance and shift their body weight over that to advance the swing leg, there is that movement to the side, about 4 or 5 centimeters. Same when they move to the other side, it shifts again. So we have up and down movement of the center of gravity as well as the side to side movement of the center of gravity. And this translates all the way up the trunk as a child walks. So when we put dynamic movement into a gait trainer and allow that gait trainer to move with the child, we are appreciating the fact that the body does move during step taking and allowing for that movement with the gait trainer. There's also another component to dynamic movement in a gait training frame, and that is through dynamic body weight support. And maybe I should give a sort of a comparison between static versus dynamic body weight support to help us appreciate dynamic body weight support. But a static body weight support system, at the outset of gait training, the straps of the pelvic support are set to some fixed length. So when the child goes to raise their center of gravity, the straps go slack. When they lower their center of gravity, these straps become taut. So it's either an on-off phase of body weight support, and this can be somewhat destabilizing to the child as they walk and as their forward momentum. And as opposed to dynamic body weight support, this is applying constant lift to the child, even as they raise their center of gravity and lower it. There's this constant support either underneath or from above if using a suspension harness. And this certainly contributes to more energy efficient gait.
So there is a lot more functional movement, it sounds like, when we add that dynamic component into the equation. Is that true?
That is true. Mm-hmm.
And that, I guess, brings about an enormous number of benefits as well. That dynamic component changes the client's range of movement, for example, and that must make it a lot easier to explore the environment, I would think.
Absolutely. So to kind of continue on that theme of what adding dynamic movement into the frame can do for a child,
right.
I kind of like to put that in the context of the actual definition of the word dynamic, because I think it also expands our expectations of dynamic gait training and its potential. And the definition is continuous and productive activity or change, energetic. So we're talking about three things when we're talking about dynamic movement and gait training. We're talking about energy efficient movement, which can be achieved by the frame. We're talking about functional movement, which can also be achieved by a dynamic frame, and also great positioning, which could be a whole topic of its own. So we won't go into that here. And then also the responsiveness to the environment, the change, being able to ambulate in different environments. So how does the gait training frame actually make it more energy efficient, the dynamic movement in the frame? Well, if you think about somebody who has a child with contractures or dystonic movement or even motor planning issues, they're going to need a lot more room in order to take a step. They will require more movement, more space for step taking. And that the frame will allow for that. As they initiate that movement, the frame will not block that movement. It will more move with them so that they can complete their step taking. And the same with dynamic body weight support. I like to use the analogy of a bicycle on a hill. You know, your bicycle's at the top of the hill. As it goes down, it gathers momentum to get up the next rise. Same with your center of gravity. At its highest peak, as it goes down to double limb stance, you're gathering speed to get up the next hill, or energy. And if you have a static body weight support that kind of blocks that forward motion as the child's center of gravity is going down, they lose that energy. They lose that forward momentum to get them up the next rise, whereas the dynamic body weight support kind of continuous support underneath them as they move forward, and they can maintain their energy level moving forward. And then we have functional. How does dynamic frame make walking more functional? It's, as it frees up the movement to walk, there's less restriction, less conscious effort, so the child can access and explore more in different environments. And also, because movement is easier, the child can achieve more step repetitions and extend their time in ambulation practice. And this is great because, according to motor learning theory and observation, increased practice and repetition results in improved and retained skill performance. So this is great stuff here.
That all sounds really terrific. But just to make sure that we're being accurate when we talk about dynamic gait training, I'm going to mention what we mention any time we talk about complex rehab technology, and that is that every client is different and every situation is different. Mm-hmm. So are there any situations in which a dynamic component is not indicated for a client?
Yes, certainly. There is a no one size fits all when it comes to adaptive equipment, and the same applies for, you know, the dynamic component on a gait trainer. And each child certainly needs to be evaluated and trialed individually. However, I can say in broad strokes where a dynamic component may not improve gait outcomes. And take, for example, a child with ataxia or balance issues, exaggerated dystonic movements. The side-to-side lateral movements of the frame may further disrupt their balance or ability to control the device. And although these children may not benefit from the side-to-side movement, they may still gain benefit from the dynamic body weight support. And that is why on our Rift and Gait Trainer, we can lock out the lateral weight shift or the vertical up and down movement, or vice versa, or both movements can be locked out so that for the child that requires the stability to walk. But certainly trialing equipment where possible is a great idea, especially for a child in question.
Okay, and I haven't heard a lot about dynamic gait training compared to the gait training that we're more familiar with, mm-hmm. without that dynamic component. So is the dynamic component a new addition to gait training?
Well, not really when you appreciate that KidWalk has been out for more than 10 years, offering movement in the three planes of the body. But there are still relatively few gait trainers that have the dynamic component currently. And although we do have a few great studies showing good outcomes with a dynamic gait trainer, our strongest evidence for dynamic movement and dynamic body weight support in combination with gait comes from expert opinion and field reports describing how increased movement or more natural movement and easier navigation when we put in the dynamic component. And then to refer back to that study on functional gait training, with over 600 participants, you know, any type of gait training is better than a standard PT intervention or strength training alone. So the dynamic component is like the icing on the cake. If we want to improve what's there, then it should be a consideration to our gait choice of gait trainer.
Okay. I mentioned earlier that I think a common misconception about gait training, maybe especially among families who first hear about it, is that gait training has just one goal, which is to teach the walker to walk independently. But we've already talked about some other benefits of gait training, even if that user is never able to walk independently. So now let's talk about what that gait training regimen could look like. As a therapist, how do you start a gait training program? For example, do you start your user indoors on a level surface before going outdoors where the surfaces would be more uneven and challenging for them? How would you start someone on this?
Okay. I like this question because it ties in with that third component of the dynamic definition, which is the responsiveness to the environment or the change. And a child needs to have the opportunity to ambulate in whatever environment is going to be the best for them at the moment, whether it is the treadmill, whether it's overground or indoors or outdoors. And in a typical rehab progression where you have somebody come in with a traumatic brain injury, they would initially start out on a treadmill to repattern their gait and walking in a supported environment where the treadmill does drive the gait and they're able to walk safely for long periods of time. And on a treadmill, it is also easier to moderate the intensity of the gait training session and keep the workout at a level that is conducive to these neuroplastic changes in the brain, this moderate to high intensity. This would then be transferred to indoor overground walking. And overground walking is more task-specific as opposed to treadmill walking where the user experiences everyday terrain because the treadmill belt is no longer driving their gait pattern and they are required to be more actively involved to propel that gait trainer forward and navigate and motor plan to get from point A to point B. And then this can be taken a step further and integrated into community ambulation outdoors, which generally involves greater distances and more demanding environments. But in the pediatric population, this gait intervention doesn't follow such a nice progression, especially in dealing with kids with developmental disability. We do like to start them out over ground because it's a functional environment, but the treadmill should be considered if the child cannot organize their gait. And interestingly enough, treadmill intervention for kids with disabilities was one of the most supported interventions in the pediatric literature, yet it is the least used. So I think that treadmill should definitely be a consideration for the child that does need that. And then, of course, there's always the consideration of how to make gait training more functional and incorporate it into the daily life or the community activities. And then I like to talk about what is called prompt reduction, because I think this also ties into the gait training progression. Many people who initially start on a gait training regimen require lots of supports to keep them in the upright position. But we should always remember that these supports can slowly be taken away as a child progresses or becomes stronger, gains more stability. We don't want them to depend on these supports in the long run. We want them to keep improving in their levels of ability here. And eventually, we would love to see them walk away from their gait trainer in the end.
Right, of course. So that's a great description of what a regimen might look like. For therapists who might be considering adding that dynamic component to their gait training sessions, or for families who are just learning about gait training and that dynamic option, do you have an example of a client you know of and how that client progressed with gait training?
Yes, I do. I actually have quite a few that I'd really love to tell, but I think I will talk about Saad today. That is Saad. And because his story, I think, especially ties into our previous discussion on the benefits of a dynamic frame. So Saad is a 21, 22-year-old young man who just graduated from the school system and transitioned to an adult services program. His diagnosis is cerebral palsy, and he does have another developmental disability, which is not on the tip of my tongue right now. and then a history of leg surgery. So when Saad came to this adult program, his wheelchair was the primary means of mobility, and he had no other equipment. So, of course, the staff got him up and put him in a standard rigid gait trainer, and this worked fine, but his gait was stiff and slow, and he would get stuck in corners or behind tables and required help to keep moving forward. But a month later, his parents got him a Rifton Dynamic gait trainer. The therapists engaged the dynamic components of the frame, and Saad went from walking stiffly to literally running. When he would see a staff member who he was fond of in the hall, he would run towards them, and he would build up so much speed that he couldn't slow down quick enough and would knock into them. Nobody minded. This is a great thing, actually. But to avoid any injuries in the future, they put the drag function on the wheels to slow him down. And the dynamic movement also allowed Saad, well, he had far less trouble maneuvering in tight spaces, backing up or turning around, because the frame kind of floated with his initiated movements. But I think best of all, this new freedom allowed him to engage more with his peers and staff, and he loves baseball and tennis, and he could get outdoors and join in now and then. Or he would challenge a staff member to a race and get laughing so hard he couldn't catch his breath. So just this greater participation the dynamic frame allowed him was awesome.
That's a great story that you actually had to slow down the gait trainer because he was bowling people over with his enthusiasm. What a great outcome. And I'm sure I already know the answer to this, but what was his family's reaction to his progress with this dynamic component?
Yeah, so when Saad arrives in the mornings now, he can't disguise his impatience to get out of his wheelchair and into the pacer. And he spends most of his day in it. He's upright and he's moving, and it's even improved his ability to access and use the toilet, which is great. So his parents, of course, are thrilled that he's up and moving, although a therapist did express some concern over the amount that Saad was sweating as he expended his efforts to move. But his parents loved to see him burning off all the energy and told the therapist only to help him out of the pacer if he was showing signs of distress. But because of his dramatic improvements over just these five months, he will be considered for graduating to the program for higher functioning adults. And with a pacer, he may be able to begin to participate in jobs and tasks that require walking.
Oh, what a terrific outcome. Thank you so much. My last question about dynamic gait training is about funding and reimbursement for gait trainers and also funding for that specific dynamic component. Does the dynamic component need to be justified separately from the gait trainer itself, or does the medical justification and documentation typically apply to the entire gait trainer unit as a whole?
Yes, reimbursement is certainly a challenging aspect to acquiring adaptive equipment. I think it always will be, and in a way I don't feel that qualified to talk about it, but gait trainers have been funded, the Rifton Dynamic gait trainers have been funded across private insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare using the E-800 codes, but it really depends, again, upon which state you are in and the writing of a good letter of medical necessity and then, of course, appealing those denials. But for reimbursement, the dynamic component is justified as part of the gait trainer and not as a separate component. And we do find that adding justification for the dynamic frame and its benefits certainly strengthens that letter of medical necessity and the possibility of reimbursement.
Okay, thank you, Elena. It sounds as if dynamic gait training is the evolution of basic gait training, and that adding that dynamic component can actually benefit the user in a number of ways so that the user and the therapist can make the most out of every gait training session. And what a marvelous example Saad was of what can be accomplished. And with that, we'll be wrapping up this podcast with Elena Noble from Rifton. My thanks to Elena for sharing her experiences with dynamic gait training, and thank you to Rifton as well for sponsoring this podcast. Mobility management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe, and you can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much to Elena Noble, to Rifton for sponsoring this podcast, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again soon.